This is chapter 3 of War on Waste Innovation, the War on Waste Tools. We have used a number of tools to help identify and analyze a waste. These tools have evolved from others of greater insight, as well as from our own unique look at the problems of identifying, quantifying, and literally getting rid of wastes. How we look at the root cause of the waste and the way we measure or accomplish is often unique. Act, learn, improve, act. Actio eruditio confectio, that is our motto. As we deliver the war on waste, we lead employees through a process that requires them to analyze the size of the waste or the effect of the waste on the company in terms of lost profits or sales. Trying to do this is not easy, but it happens because the employees have a goal of finding an answer to a question that they know is costing the company money, and they really get into it. They love the action created by the war on waste. As the process unfolds, teaching tools and techniques are introduced when they are needed to help frame a problem in a different light or use a new tool to stretch their thinking, book learning, as it were. The war on waste begins with classroom analysis and activity. We push our clients' employees to begin implementing the smallest changes right away. So one might say that our model is act, learn, improve, and then act again. This is not an insignificant difference. The other strategies of major organizational change begin with the education and training. They are apparently based on the model act or learn and act. The problem with this model is that is not how most humans really operate. Most people act and learn from their experience. So when an organization really wants to change the patterns of work, it is very ineffective to teach employees tools and methods and then expect them to find ways to use them. It is much more simple to move them to work on changing work processes and then providing them the tools that they need when they need them. The war on waste begins with no blame. The no blame raises the banner of protection for ideas and the actions that those ideas demand. The war on waste is all about improving a business using a systematic approach to analyzing inefficiencies in business processes. It doesn't take much thought to understand what this is about. It simply means that when an action is taken, no one is going to be blamed in the war on waste system for doing something. You may be asked to explain a particular action when the results aren't as expected, but you will never be blamed. You are expected to learn from your action, make any appropriate improvements, and act again. In our work with companies during the war on waste projects, we can quickly move employees to action, but you can trust me that they won't move on anything without our laying down protection to them with no blame. Employees are reluctant to make any suggestions without the protection of no blame and the support of the CEO. In this system, we want employees to come up with ideas and do what it takes to make them happen. So as an action is taking place, we want employees to act, learn, improve. The war on waste is all about action. In other words, act, do something that will eliminate a waste that has been identified, learn from what you have done, and improve. Correct the problems of your earlier actions and act again. To many, this seems probably trivial. It might even be very obvious, but it isn't from our experience. Owners of business get very frustrated over this because their employees are not entirely comfortable taking action after years of restraints from inputting ideas into their own company. So we get really excited when we see employees following our motto. It means that they are comfortable putting an idea into play. They are accepting of the concept that things may not always go as expected, and they know that the owner will not berate them for a failed or less than successful effort.
This is big-time stuff. It is exciting to watch. When an employee makes a jump to buy into Act, Learn, Improve, it is an act of commitment to a management concept. And with that commitment comes more new ideas. We call this a management approach, the tribal knowledge paradigm. The Bebo 120-20 rule of profits. This is a corollary to the 80-20 rule that really gives us greater insight into the happenings in business. A consultant friend showed me this rule. We all know it. 120% of a company's profits come from 20% of the customer, or 20% of the salesman, or 20% of the products or services. I call it the 120-20 rule of profits in honor of my consultant friend who pointed it out to me. That was Don Bebo, who is a venture capital investor now. In his former life, he was a management consultant who specialized in turning around distressed companies. The reason that this rule is so important in developing an effective customer-driven strategy is it will allow us to focus our attention on those customers who deliver the most profit to the company. It may also provide substantial information to focus us while we try to understand why these customers are more profitable. Consider this example from one client. This particular customer of ours had about 100 customers. 40 of these customers accounted for 90% of his business. The lowest 40 customers accounted for less than 5% of his business. We analyzed his accounts and found that about 40% of his bidding activity was consumed by the bottom 5%. In a sales department, it is difficult to measure profitability. Don't get hung up there. Take a simple approach. So we did. We established that each phone call to a customer or a visit to a customer is given a point. Each bid was given 50 points. These then translated in points of overhead. We then used these points to measure how much activity was acquired by each customer for each dollar of bidding, and then measured how these dollars were won. So, when a salesman had to decide where they were going to spend their time, they basically went to the customers that had the fewest points per dollar of resulting bids won. A simple formula, but it worked. The interesting corollary to this rule is that the only way for this rule to exist if some of the customer, salesmen, or products or services are unprofitable. Unlike the 80-20 rule, which only deals with positive numbers, the 120-20 rule allows for negative numbers, losses. In the attached figure, we show five quintiles of profitability of different customers. One is 120% of the profits, another is 50%, another is 5% of the profits, and a third, fourth is minus 20%, and a fifth is minus 53%. Those represent the five quintiles of profitability of different customers, the range of customers in a business, and the sum total is 100% of the profits. So in that particular case of distribution of profits, they total 100%, but some are more profitable than 100%. I remember giving a talk where one CEO in the audience had a grin on his face after I mentioned the 120-20 rule of profits. His mind was working, and I probably wouldn't have noticed him if he hadn't made a big deal out of opening his briefcase to pull out a notebook. He started writing furiously. Clearly his mind was doing something. Afterwards, he came up, thanked me for my great insight, and he left hurriedly. The next day, he called me to tell me what he had done. He owned a business, and he had five salesmen. One of the five salesmen generated 60% of his revenue and about 150% of his profits. One of the other salesmen took up all of his time, always complained about the products they didn't have, the orders they were going to lose, and so on. The CEO went back to his office, called a non-productive salesman into his office, and fired him immediately. He realized while I was talking that it wasn't the guy was bad. He just kept the CEO from being able to provide support to the other, more profitable salesman. In fact,
What he did changed the sales organization to help the successful salesman make more proposals, and they had the other three salesmen support him. And it was a good deal for everyone because everyone made more money. I don't know if that was the right move, but he calls me regularly to thank me and takes me out to lunch about once a quarter to pick my brain for more ideas. As a result, as a corollary to the 120-20 rule of profits, Don Beepo has another axiom: feed the winners, starve the losers. His position here is that if you have a winning product or salesman, do everything you can to make them as successful as you can. However, when you have a loser, don't terminate them or end their product development effort immediately. Just cut back on the financial support and see what happens. Sometimes the failure is timing in a particular market. There may be not enough time available to complete the project for whatever reason. But if you have a salesman or a new product that is failing, don't kill them. Just reduce the resources available, because there are a lot of successes that failed in their initial efforts, and by dribbling funds to the team involved, you never know. But once you've played that card to its limit, you cut your losses, but not without first trying. This line of thinking fits well with our work with the 5-67 rule. This is the 5% of the effort that gets 67% of the results. When a CEO is doling out money for new products, he should try doing a product with 5% of the features, get you to the market quickly, and see what happens. It's amazing how much information is extracted from the market this way. On this subject, one of my associates refers to his mentor from graduate school, who was a former CEO at Warner Lambert. This CEO used to say that it was a counterintuitive, but he knew he was doing a good job when 50% of his projects were successful. His reason for saying this is a corollary to the 5-67. You never know all that you think you know when you release a product. In going with a few features and releasing the product quickly with good customer feedback, you could get more useful information to guide your decision to spend more money on a product that may be a loser. His conclusion was to feed the winners with more money and starve the losers with less money. Good advice. I think so. The next time we'll be talking about cycle time, lead time, and some data gathering rules for the war on waste. Thank you very much. This is the end of part one. We look forward to chapter three. We look forward to seeing you on the other side. And if you want to reach me, you can call me at 510-520-8011 or email me at len@pertaim.com. Thank you very much.